Mike Berry says when he and his wife, Kristen, decided they were going to adopt children, they had no idea what they were getting into.
I would say Kristen had a more realistic perspective than I did. What we didn't have was we had no trauma knowledge in terms of some of the trauma history that our kids went through. So how trauma changes the brain and how it dictates behaviors, we had no clue. But I was the person that I immediately went to the superhero complex, the rescuer, like, we're going to do this. And now I am the superhero that is going to swoop down and pull this child out of this dark, awful place. And I'm going to be the hero and I'm going to walk into our church and everybody's going to applaud for me. That was the, I know, it's ridiculous. And a lot of people struggle with that.
This is Family Life Today. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. Adoption is a wonderful thing. It's also a very challenging thing, as we'll hear about today from Mike Berry. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. You know, we've talked a lot about adoption over the years on Family Life Today, but I don't think I've ever met anybody, much less interviewed anybody, who adopted a 24-year-old. That's a pretty unique situation, but that's what we got going for us today.
Yeah, and it makes you want to hear the story behind that story. That's got to be a very unique person, which is who we have in the studio today.
Mike Berry joins us on Family Life Today. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Mike is an author, a speaker, a blogger, and has written a book called Confessions of an Adoptive Parent. You and your wife are parents to how many?
Eight children.
Eight kids, including the oldest.
Yes.
Who you adopted at 24.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, hold on to that story because we want to start at the beginning with all of this. Uh-huh. Where did your desire and your passion for adoption come from?
Well, going all the way back to the beginning of the story or beginning of our story, the passion came from my wife because she grew up in a family that was an adoptive family. Her grandfather was in the foster care system, aged out of the foster care system. So she grew up with storylines of foster care adoption. So as I like to say, her heart was tuned to adoption and foster care.
Yeah, I remember you said earlier in your book that when you were dating, she told you.
Oh, yeah.
I do not want to have biological children. I want to adopt.
This was on the checklist. Like, if you're not game for this, we're done.
This was sitting on our college campus.
Wow.
In front of our library in Cincinnati, on the west side of Cincinnati. And all of these other couples are walking around holding hands and dreaming of their having children, which I was the same way. I'm like, this is going to be great. We're going to have this beautiful little house and, you know, three little mini-me's of myself. And then here I'm sitting with this woman that's like, no, we're going to adopt all of our kids.
How did you feel about that? And you're a young man. What were your thoughts?
I resisted. And I always say that we had a very colorful discussion that night, which is code for we duked it out, man. We fought it out right there. And it wasn't because I was against adoption. It was just because I didn't grow up with it. It wasn't a storyline in my family growing up. And plus, I went to school with kids who were in foster care who, had needs and had issues. And so I had a little bit of a tainted perspective. And I just didn't really know anybody who had done this, you know?
Mike, most of the people I've talked to over the years would say, we wanted adoption to be part of our story. Your wife was saying, I want it to be the whole story.
Which is
absolutely
pretty unusual.
It is, very much so. And that was also part of it because we went to a small Christian college and everybody is getting married. It was kind of like the, you know, this is the format.
The MRS degree.
The MRS degree, yes. So everybody's getting that. Everybody's getting married. Everybody's having children. And then they're going off and working in the church. And so, and I was kind of one of those people that back then I was a follow the crowd, and it wasn't a bad crowd to follow. You know, I mean, you're getting married, you're going and working in the church, you're doing ministry. But then I have this total foreign idea thrown at me that we're going to adopt all of our kids, and it just wasn't what I grew up with. So naturally, I pushed back.
Well,
I resisted.
How did she win you over? What happened? Did she win you over? Did God win you over?
we're both first children. So you know how first children are who get married. It's like, this is my sandbox. These are my toys. And you, if I will invite you into my sandbox to play with these toys when I say so. You know, that's kind of how first children are. So typically, my wife's very vocal. We talk a lot. We're very vocal. We're communicators, so we talk. But one of the things she did, which I thought was really interesting, was that she didn't say anything else. It just didn't come up again. It was still very much on her heart, but she could tell that I was going through a little bit of a battle. I was wrestling through some things, and there were a lot of other things going on too, just a lot of insecurities I was working through. But she had somebody say to her, you know what, you need to let this go for a while. And you need to, if it's something that's supposed to happen, then you need to trust that God is going to make that happen, and you need to pray about that, and then just pray for him.
Don't you be the person that talks him into this.
Yeah. Right. And we've, you know, in all of our years of working with families, we have often coached couples that, listen, you cannot drag somebody into this journey because it's a calling. And when that happens, you're not entering into this journey with the right intentions and the right means. So she did that. She just let it go. And then what was interesting is that there were moments in the years that followed, the 3 to 5 years that followed, where people would come into my life. One of those in particular was a guy who started off adopting before he had children biologically. And I was sitting there like, are you kidding me? Like, you've adopted your kids and you don't have any biological kids. And so moments like that happen. And, you know, when we adopted our first born daughter, Jayla, you look at her, you look into her eyes and that's it. You're done, you know? So, you know, at that moment, it's like, my heart was changed. And I always, and the way I say it in the book is that God changed my heart. You know, that's really what it was.
And, you know, before we leave that first topic, I think it's important for people to consider this. If you're trying to change your spouse, whether it's adoption or you name it, trust God.
Yeah.
It's like state your heart, share your heart, and then let it go. Because the harder you push, well, again, in your situation, it was adoption, but it's really in any situation. I'm saying this so that my wife will hear me.
You know? Yeah, she's sitting close to you. Yeah. Like, she's within reaching distance.
See that look I gave her?
Yeah.
You're saying the badger strategy is not a good strategy.
It doesn't work for me.
It could never work for me.
I am good at that. Like, I am good at kind of getting in there.
And badgering?
Yes.
You're good at it, but it doesn't work.
It does, and I've come to realize that it really does not work.
And your story is a beautiful one of how your wife did honestly share.
It's almost like she laid it down and said, God, this is your
business.
And that's
hard to do. She did. It's hard to let it go.
Yeah.
It
is.
She did. And, you know, even that story of that gentleman is like, look at what God's doing. It's like, I've got this.
Was her reticence to have bio kids, was it, I don't want to get pregnant, I don't want the pain, or was it philosophically driven, like, we shouldn't have kids. There are so many kids who need a home.
Yes. That was the driving factor right there, that she saw what her parents went through to bring her youngest brother home. She remembered the stories that her grandfather would tell, you know, as he grew up. And he grew, I mean, we're talking, this was in the 40s, you know, I think around that time that he was growing up in the foster care system. So there were zero resources back then. So some of the heartache that he went through, some of the struggles he went through, Kristen has one of the biggest hearts for justice on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, way back then she hears those stories and it's like, that's it right there. There's so many children who are in need. That's what our focus is.
Along the way in your marriage journey, have there been moments when she's seen a pregnant woman and just thought, maybe once?
We did find out we were pregnant in 2011. Hmm. Our youngest son was still in foster care, and he was soon to be adopted. And it was one of those moments where we both talked about it and decided, well, let's see what happens. You know, we ended up miscarrying, which was really painful. Hmm. And at the end of that experience, that was really, really super hard. That was harder than I ever thought it would be. And that was right before the holidays, right before Christmas. Because I remember that because my wife looked at me and all that pain. You know, I'm saying, hey, what can I do? And she said, I just want to go buy one of those 12-foot Christmas trees that are pre-lit at Lowe's. That's what we did.
Yeah.
You know, and we set that thing up. And it was just kind of one of those, like, let's just do something that's joyous, you know, to take our mind off of this. Mm. That was really hard. But I remember going through that and we realized, you know what, maybe this is just confirmation that what we have before us is what our focus is. You know, and that was hard because we still were excited. We went through all that emotion. and then it didn't happen.
I want to go all the way back to the engagement because you were clearly in love with this woman. You knew this is the woman you wanted to marry, but you also knew this is a decision that I'm making that I'll never have bio kids. Mm-hmm. Were there second thoughts, misgivings? Did you walk closer to the altar and go, wait, am I going to be able to live with this?
I don't know if it was a situation where I was second guessing or feeling like, maybe this isn't a good choice. But I do, there were moments where I felt that something was missing. But I never could quite, I don't even think I could articulate back then that this is what it was. Because now I look back on that and I wouldn't even say that I was fully committed to that. It's one of those moments where you, if this makes sense, that you're on this journey and you feel like, I love this, but I feel so distant from it, you know, but then all along the way, God was changing my heart. Mm-hmm. And what I often tell people is that adoption and foster care, this journey, it's broken me from some serious selfishness. Mm-hmm. Because as I look way, way back in those engagement days, I was a horribly self-centered person. Mm-hmm. And that was a process I had to work through. I mean, we all have to work through that. We all, human beings, have to work through that, and we still struggle with that.
I was going to say, you're not alone in being horribly selfish.
Which is true for even bio kids.
Sure, absolutely.
Dad works through that and tears out our selfishness.
Yeah.
Tries to.
It was more than it was just like a destroying. It was like a, you know, just destroying me. And that, so I can't even say right now that, oh, I wish we would have, because I'm so glad we went, that we're on the journey we're on.
Yeah.
You know, I just had a picture. I was speaking at a church out in Seattle, and when I put a picture up of my family, which I often do, it's one of those moments where I'm looking at this picture and feeling like this deep, deep abiding love for these people on the screen. Mm. And I could not have written a better story. That's why I'm glad the pen was taken out of my hands, because the story I would have wanted to write, not the story that I'm living, and I'd much rather live the story I'm living.
And it's interesting, if you haven't read your book or know your story, there's, you could actually hear you right now and think, oh, this must be just a unbelievable, beautiful family with all these wonderful days after days with all these kids. And early in the book, you find out, I'm going to read this. It says,
yeah, go for it.
We've been to some of the darkest places ever, including, and here's just a list, and I'm sure this is like triple this, but constant rejection from a child we would move mountains to love and serve, another child wanting to end her life at just 12 years old, a child who routinely, emotionally, and physically attacks our family, multiple run-ins with police with one of our kids, judgmental stares, whispers, and glares from teachers, coaches, neighbors, and extended family, feeling that we messed up, missed our calling, or failed as parents because we can't stop our children from making horrible choices.
Mm-hmm. All true.
Yeah, I mean, part of you, read that and you go like, who wants that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I want a nice family that's just, everybody goes to bed at 8 o'clock
yes,
at night.
Yes, thank you, Mom and Dad, for feeding us today.
Yes, they rise and call you blessed.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I'm guessing before you adopted, you never imagined that that would be the list you'd write someday.
Right.
No. Did you have the fairy tale, happily ever after, these children will be so grateful that we have stepped in and adopted them? That was your
absolutely.
Picture?
Yeah. I would say Kristen had a more realistic perspective than I did. What we didn't have was we had no trauma knowledge in terms of some of the trauma history that our kids went through. So how trauma changes the brain and how it dictates behaviors. We had no clue what any of that looked like. But I was the person that I immediately, and this is really out of that self-centeredness that I really struggled with, I immediately went to the superhero complex, the rescuer, like, okay, we're going to do this, and now I am the superhero that is going to swoop down and pull this child out of this dark, awful place, and I'm going to be the hero, and I'm going to walk into our church, and everybody's going to applaud for me. That was I know, it's ridiculous, but that's, and a lot of people struggle with that.
I was going to ask, do a lot of people walk into this with those thoughts?
Totally. Often people message us or walk up to us after live events, and they'll say things, and you immediately can see that, okay, this is, you're going to hit a brick wall. Like, if you're called to do this, do this. This is a calling. There's no question, but there will be a moment when you find yourself running into a wall because you were so focused on the, what we like to call, you know, the Hollywood perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, Angelina Jolie jumps on a Learjet and flies to Cambodia. that would have been awesome. If I had a Learjet at my disposal, I would have flown somewhere to bring a child home. But that's not reality for most of us. So people get that idea that this is what it's going to look like, or I'm going to have the child that goes to bed at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
The other thing that people have the misconception over is that the way that I grew up, the traditional methods that my parents used, in my household, in my wife's household, if our parents said no, that was the end. No meant no. And you could challenge it, but then there's going to be problems, right? But those traditional methods don't work with kiddos who have come from traumatic places, who have been through significant abuse, neglect, gone through all of these things that we can't even imagine.
I talked to a friend who had adopted two boys out of foster care. When they got them, the boys were 4 and 6 years old, and they already had bio kids. Mm-hmm. And so he had experienced his bio kids lying to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew pretty well how to deal with a lying child, mm-hmm. right? He knew that you could talk to them, and pretty soon the cracks in their story will reveal, and their heart will get soft, and they'll confess, and you can have these healing moments. He said, then I get these two kids who have learned as a life coping mechanism mm-hmm. at age 4. Mm-hmm. The way you survive is by lying with impunity, mm-hmm. with no conscience seared at all. And he said, as a parent, I have no idea what to do in this situation. Mm-hmm. And my kids are lying and smiling and sticking to the story.
Yeah.
He said, I was stymied with this and wondering, how do you make this work? This is the kind of reality you've dealt with, not only with lying, but all kinds of issues, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have to go into this journey understanding that children who have gone through chronic trauma, you know, starvation, neglect, abuse, witness domestic violence, the list goes on and on, they are functioning in survival mode. You know, so if our brainstem exists to help us survive, like we do things without thinking, breathing, heartbeat, movement, our amygdala is the alarm system in our brain, our prefrontal cortex is the reasoning and logic and self-control, all of those things in our brains, I mean, I wouldn't consider myself a normal person, you know, but if something happens, my amygdala pops, an alarm goes off, but then eventually it calms down, right? But a child who has gone through chronic abuse or neglect and been through chronic trauma, that amygdala stays popped and they are functioning out of brainstem. So you can't look at a child in that situation and say, what's wrong with you, or why did you, or how could you? Because they simply can't answer that. Mm. They don't know. Well, they're working in survival mode.
One of the things you say in the book is you had to learn how to win your child's heart. What does that mean, and what did that look like?
The way that I grew up, it was a very vocal household, and so dad always had the last word. And so when I stepped into parenting, I kind of had that mentality like, what I say is final. There's no discussion. It's my way or the highway, and that's the end of it, right? And I prided myself on making sure my kids knew that I was in charge and I had the last word, and there's no pushing back. What I say goes. And so my focus, especially with some of my kids, was I want to make sure that you understand that I'm in control and that what I say goes. So I prided myself on winning the argument, but all the while, I'm losing their heart. Mm. So I'm losing this ability, this opportunity to connect with them on a deeper level, which oftentimes parents fall into because they see things like disagreements or arguments or those tense moments with your kids. They see those as a me versus you. And there are still boundaries. There are still guidelines and household rules, but at the same time, we have this opportunity to connect with our kids and enter into conversations with them to really learn what they're thinking, especially as they grow into the teen years. You know, like, why do you feel so strongly about this? Or, you know, maybe a situation where you could say, why did you do that? You know, what were you thinking? You know, and give them permission to speak into that. The boundaries still stay in place, but you're building a bridge instead of creating a wall. And that's key.
I mentioned as we started today that you're the only guy I've ever met who adopted a 24-year-old. So
it's not many of us.
Before we get too far along here, tell us that story.
Yeah, that's always one of the biggest questions we get, like, what in the world? You know, and most people don't realize you can't adopt adults. Like, you can adopt any adult. there's really no state-by-state regulations. So as soon as I adopted her, I had lots of people saying, well, will you adopt me? Like, I'll, you know, I had those requests. Like, it's really weird. You know, it got really weird really quick. But Rachel, who is our oldest child, as a freshman in high school, we moved to Indiana to become youth pastors. And she was in our youth group. And she was in a youth group in a suburban area with people that attended our church, had lots and lots of money. She didn't come from that kind of a background. And we connected with her because she was very standoffish. She wasn't a type A personality. And Kristen really began mentoring her from her freshman year on. Her mother passed away 2 weeks after her high school graduation. Mm-hmm. So she moved in with us in the summer of 2004. We moved her into college that fall. And she just remained a part of our family. And then you fast forward, I think it was 2011, maybe 2012. She showed up one July afternoon to our house. And we're just having a conversation. And she looks at us and she says, hey, by the way, I know what I want for Christmas this year. Mm. Which was like, okay, I mean, that's early, but let's talk.
Yeah.
You know, she said, I want to be adopted. And, you know, we looked at her and we said, Rachel, you've always been a part of our family. She said, I know, but I want the paper that says, I want to make this official. And we said, if that's what you want, then absolutely. Mm. And so we went to our county courthouse and finalized her adoption. It was really cool. And she was 24 at the time.
How many kids did you have at that point?
At that point, we had seven.
So she's the last one.
Yeah, she's the eighth.
What did she really want?
You know, permanency. Her biological father, biological mother, both had passed on. She has a biological brother who she's still connected to. But I think that all of us want to belong somewhere. All of us want to be able to say that's home. And you picture like the child, the 8-year-old, the 9-year-old who's just longing for that forever home. It really breaks your heart because you realize, I don't know what that's like. I always had my home and I still do to this day. I could call my mom and dad and I could go home at any point. But to think about that in a child who, an 11-year-old, 12-year-old, it's like, I don't want a Nintendo. I don't want an iPhone. I want a mom and dad. That breaks your heart right there.
Yeah.
You know, reading this book, I kept thinking anybody who's thinking about adoption, that'll read this first. This is kind of that cold slap in the face that just goes, let's just make sure you know what you're getting yourself into. And we're advocates here. I mean, we think adoption's a good thing. Yeah. We're for it. We think people should go into it. But I've run into listeners to Family Life Today who have said to me, you guys need to tell the whole story. Don't just paint the romantic picture, but tell the whole story because it's hard. And sometimes you get yourself into stuff that you go, man, can we even survive this? The list you read, Dave, I mean, that's a pretty powerful list.
Oh, and honestly, that's, you know, better than anyone in this room, Mike. That's just a little bit of the list.
It is.
As you keep reading, that book tells you the truth. Confessions is real. But I'm sitting here just moved by the heart of God in you because, you know, Paul says, Apostle Paul in Ephesians 1:5, we are adopted, you know, predestined to adoption as sons and daughters to the King. So I feel like I'm looking at sort of the picture in a human level of God's heart.
Yeah.
You've got the heart of God. I know it's hard and we're rebellious kids to our Heavenly Father, but way to go. And it really is a calling from God, and you're modeling to the world, this is the heart of the Father for us as rebellious children. And it's a beautiful, beautiful picture of the heart of God.
Thank you.
We've got copies of the book Mike has written. It's called Confessions of an Adoptive Parent, Hope and Help from the Trenches of Foster Care and Adoption. You can order copies when you go online at familylifetoday.com or call if you'd like to request a book. Our number is 1-800-FL-TODAY. So again, the website, familylifetoday.com, or call to get a copy of Confessions of an Adoptive Parent, 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. You know, I keep thinking back today to what Dennis Rainey called the prayer of the helpless parent, which is that prayer that says, help. We're all in a position of dependence, whether we're dealing with adopted kids or bio kids. Mm-hmm. And David Robbins, the president of Family Life, is here. That's a good place for us to be, isn't it?
I think a lot of times it's the
place God purposely puts us, where we are dependent upon Him. And the whole conversation today reminds me of the power of trusting God for the values that He's put in our hearts, the power of prayer, the power of the Holy Spirit living inside of us, the same Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead, the power of dependence when He does put us in that posture and we offer ourselves up to Him and He shows up. I mean, God consistently puts people in positions where we are desperate for His power, and then He shows up in provision in ways that display His greatness. And my heart is engaged some today, and I'm just thinking, if your heart's racing and God is prompting something in you, whether that's prompting to explore adoption or something completely different, but He's using this conversation today to prompt you to something, I just would encourage you to reflect on the ways God has been consistently prompting you and take it seriously and really depend upon Him and lean into it with faith.
Yeah, that's a good challenge, David. Thank you for that. Speaking of challenges, I want to challenge our Family Life Today listeners with something. During the month of May, we have a special opportunity here at Family Life to take advantage of a matching gift opportunity. Some friends of the ministry have come along and offered to match every donation we receive this month, dollar for dollar, up to a total of $550,000. Now, that's a big goal to try to match that. So we're hoping that Family Life Today listeners will make either a one-time donation or become a legacy partner and begin making monthly donations. In fact, if you become a legacy partner, every donation you make for the next 12 months is going to be matched dollar for dollar until that matching gift fund is depleted. So we're hoping that some of you will make a one-time donation. Others of you will consider becoming monthly legacy partners to help support the ongoing ministry of Family Life Today. If you become a legacy partner, we want to say thank you for that by sending you a certificate so that you and your spouse or someone you know can attend one of our Weekend to Remember Marriage getaways as our guests. Again, the certificate is our way of saying thank you for becoming a new legacy partner, and you can sign up for that or make a one-time donation online at familylifetoday.com or do it by calling 1-800-FL-TODAY. And we just want to say thanks in advance for being part of the team and helping to make Family Life Today possible for people in your community and for people all over the world. And we hope you can join us back tomorrow. We're going to talk about what every prospective adoptive parent needs to know so they can go into adoption fully ready, with eyes wide open. Mike Berry will join us again tomorrow. I hope you can join us as well. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a Crew ministry. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.